Okay. You know, we have these informal discussions every couple of weeks, and right now we're preparing ourselves for the RFA, the request for applications, that's going to be coming out. We expected it might be out by now, but it should be out any time. Last year it was about this time, and that'll be for FY22, their request for applications, their cooperative agreements, which we'll talk about in a second. These discussions are informal, and everyone has open mics. I'll probably have to, if we have more people come on, I may have to remind everyone again. And occasionally, you could either mute yourself, don't put us on hold, or we'll get your music. But or just be quiet and speak up throughout the discussion, because the reason we like open mics, that's the way this app works. But also, if you have anything you'd like to contribute or insert in the discussion, we like you to contribute as much as possible. Right now, we've been focusing on this RFA that's soon to come out.
Michael,
we're working
LA
basically.
Conservation Corps.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. Right.
Anyone else? Anyone else join? Okay.
Cindy Bennett, so, Missouri Job Center in Springfield, Missouri.
Great. Okay. And as I said, we got open mics, so if you can't mute yourself, just be quiet and silent. But don't be quiet if you have something you'd like to say. And we welcome interruptions as long as it has to do with our discussion point that we're talking about. We do pick up just about everything on these headphones. So just a word of caution. As I was saying, we're really focusing right now on the RFA that'll be coming out later in the fall. We'll switch back to talking about what different grantees are doing and how they're doing it and landmines and things that they find that work and things that don't work. But right now we're solely focused on this RFA. Once that comes out, you only have 60 days to write your proposal. So we want to do those things until they come out that take time, could improve your proposal, or even if you have an existing grant, something you may want to think about in enhancing your proposal. Those 60 days, once the RFA is announced, you also can't talk to your regional coordinator. And right now, if you wanted to talk to them about your specific grant, you could, but as soon as that comes out, they can only talk in group talks like this to a number of people, and they can't talk about specific grants. So if you do have specific questions or help regarding your specific grant, if you're going to be applying for this, it's time to do that. We don't know yet. We know it'll be 60 days when it'll be due as soon as that comes out. We don't know how many grantees. That depends on how much money they have. It's a simple formula. If they get $6 million, there'll be 30 grants. If there's $5 million, there'll be 15 grants. And they distribute all the money. And it's done on a curve. Those who have the highest points are considered for funding, although there are some caveats. They want to distribute the money fairly equally among the geographical areas of the country and the special circumstances and new and returning grantees. But Steve's going to talk about that in a second. Well, we always start off the discussion with what's happening in Washington and what's happening at HMTRI and at some of the grantees. So, Steve, do you want to give us a rundown of what's going on?
Sure. And good afternoon, or actually, is it still morning in Alaska? I think it is. Good morning to our Alaska folks, and good afternoon to the rest. Latest news from Washington, just want to reiterate again, the National Brownfields Conference is still on for December 8th through 11th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So we'll have a link in the PLC notes to the conference website if you want additional information, but that's still on. And also, I mentioned this last week, we'll mention it again. The Phoenix Awards are on again this year, and you can submit an award nominee, and the deadline is by September 3rd, so you still have plenty of time. And basically, the Phoenix Awards reflect the progression of Brownfield's redevelopment over the past 20-plus years by recognizing people, projects, organizations, and both public, private, and nonprofit across the country focused on brownfields and economic development. So it's an opportunity to, be nominated for good work in that area. And the winners are going to be notified November 1st and announced at the Brownfields 2021 evening event on December 10th. So, and again, we will include a link in the PLC notes this week if you're interested in nominating someone. Application is right there. So that's the latest from Washington. And then with HMTRI, some of you may have noticed we sent out an evaluation, basically an end of year program evaluation of our activities. We sent that out a week or so ago, and we want to thank those of you that have responded and want to encourage those of you who haven't responded to please do so. This is kind of our end of year opportunity to look at everything that we've done so far at HMTRI in terms of providing technical assistance and, the all grantee meeting, the listserv, all the things we do, including these PLC meetings. We want to find out how useful and valuable they are to you. And it's a very short survey. There's basically 10 questions or statements that have either strongly agree, neutral, disagree, strongly disagree, or not applicable. Basically select one of those. So the first 10 questions are pretty straightforward and basic. And then there's three narrative questions that give you an opportunity to let us know a little bit more in detail about your perceptions of the technical assistance efforts that we've made. And this is an opportunity for us to reflect on where we're at and if we need to make adjustments. This is your opportunity to let us know where we're at, and we're willing to adjust if necessary. So we sent out one. It actually is was created through Google Forms, and I sent it out through my Gmail address, and we'll be doing that again either later today or tomorrow. If you haven't filled it out, please consider doing so. It probably won't take you more than 5 or 10 minutes, and we'd really appreciate it. So, and then the other thing that we're in the process of doing is updating the grantee directory, and this helps to facilitate communication among grantees and also with potential employers. So we're in the process of updating, and then we want to publish the grantee directory. And this will provide contact information, curriculum, graduate certifications, training schedules, and when compiled and updated, it will provide benefits to potential employers and also allow for networking opportunities amongst grantees and also facilitate the exchange of curriculum, student retention and support services, and a lot of information. And will also help us to be able to generate reports if we get asked for information, from the entire program. We'll be able to compile data pretty easily. So that's coming out probably the first week or so of August. So you'll get another email from us. It'll be another Google Form document, but it's, again, fairly straightforward and simple to complete. So keep that in mind. And then also Mike mentioned about the previous awardees and kind of where things stand now. And just kind of looking back in previous PLC notes, we congratulated and summarized the FY21 funded programs. And now with this new request, the FRA expected this summer, we kind of looked at, everything kind of in a nutshell. And we currently have 44 active grantee awards from FY20 and 21 combined. 17 of those organizations received funding in FY21 and are not eligible to apply as part of this summer's competition. So among grantees from FY 2017 and 2018, there were 8 grantees that were not funded. And then, of course, there were no awards made in FY 2019. So kind of in summary, there's like 26 FY 20 grantees and then 8 that previously were not funded in 2017 and 18. That's like 34 grantees that would be eligible to resubmit along with new applicants. And so, you know, depending on how many applicants, new applicants there are, you know, if there's say 16 more or 20 more, you know, that's on top of the 34, the 26 from FY20 and 8 previously unfunded from 2017 and 2018, that's 34 total. And if you had 15, 16 new ones, you'd have about 50 applications. And looking at what they normally approve, you know, somewhere in the 15 to 20 range, I mean, I think the odds look encouraging. Of course, you know, the awards are also made depending on state and region. You know, there's some other factors to consider there. But I guess the point is, I mean, the odds are not bad. You know, if you have a really good proposal and submit it, you have pretty good odds to be successful. Then lastly, the last thing I wanted to mention was one of our grantees, the Energy Coordinating Agency out of Philadelphia. I don't know if anybody's on the call from there. Is there anyone by chance? Oh, okay. I just wanted to mention they're having an energy assistance conference October 1st from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm assuming that's Eastern time. And the conference is called Recovering Communities After a Crisis. And that might be something, you know, that you might be interested in. We will put the website in the PLC notes so you have it if you're interested to look it up. But they're doing a virtual conference, energy conference, so it might be interesting. And ECA, in case you're not familiar with them, I mean, their core curriculum includes 40-hour HAZWOPER, the OSHA 10, mold and moisture, lead renovation, repair, and painting, and then the whole house air sealing and insulation program, as well as other certifications. And then their program, in a nutshell, their plans are to train 54 students and place 48 in environmental jobs, which is pretty ambitious. That's about 88-89%. And they're targeting returning citizens, Latino residents, unemployed and underemployed residents, and then recent high school graduates of North Philadelphia's low-income West Kensington neighborhood. So interesting. I mean, they're an interesting grantee. And that it's a Zoom conference. It should be, you know, interesting. So I wanted to mention that. Again, we'll put the link in the PLC notes. So does anybody have over anything we just covered? Well, if not, Mike, I'll turn it over to you and just leave with please fill out the evaluation form. If you haven't seen it, I'll be sending it out again. So thanks.
The only thing I'd like to add to that is that look at that Phoenix Award. If you have time between now and September 3rd, think about applying. When you get the notes, you could click on the link if you don't have it and see what's involved in filling out your organization. Over the years, it's a nice award, big glass award, and yeah, they'll display it at the conference and they'll give you recognition. But more so, you could bring it back home and it doesn't hurt in terms of the local crowd that you've gotten this. We've had several. They have many different groups. And so depending on how they want to distribute those Phoenix Awards, you have a good shot at it, particularly if no one else in our area, whether it's environmental justice or special situation that you have, has submitted, you have a good shot at getting one of these Phoenix Awards. And it's a good quiver to have in your armory in terms of your local politics and what's going on back home. So I would just click on Phoenix Awards, see what's involved in writing up a paragraph or two, and submit it, and see where that takes you. I would recommend that. What we want to do, of course, in the PLC is get you up on that curve. We've got those 34 legacy grantees, and we've got some new ones. And, of course, depending on how much funding goes into this, will be on how many they'll be able to fund. We want the best, those who are really interested in this program, to continue and get refunded. So we definitely want to do that. We want to use people who are currently, were just awarded grants. We're hoping they'll help us as mentors. And, of course, they have to think about next year, because the same thing, this is one thing about this grant, it's repetitive, and there'll be, this one's coming out this summer, next summer, there'll be another group of people, those who are currently funded, who will be eligible. This grant does not change too much. We're basing what we talk about until the RFA comes out on the 21 guidelines, and we found over the last five cycles, they varied not a lot. So I think we can go by this and be pretty close. And today what we're going to be doing is talking about this partnerships, which is important for existing grantees, new grantees, and people just getting started. Before we do that, we've had some questions over a period of time about nomenclature. What are grants? We got a grant, okay. And then other people say, no, we got a cooperative agreement. Well, we just thought it would be interesting to just clear this up a little bit. There are grants, there are cooperative agreements, which are grants, and then, of course, there are contracts. And a grant is what you might think it is. They grant you money. There's usually an application kit. Many of you are getting grants from foundations. No questions asked. We like the work you're doing. Here's $10,000, here's $100,000. Do your good work and do it well, and maybe give us a progress report and let us know, or we'd like to come to your graduations, that type of thing. What's happening in the federal government more than that is the cooperative agreement, which is a grant. The difference between a cooperative agreement and just an outright grant of money is that the federal government is in your business, basically. They have to approve your work plans. They have the responsibility of collaborating with you, keeping in touch with you, reviewing your staff. If you make major changes in the budget or in your staff, you really need to go back to your project officer and inform them what you're doing. You may have to put that in writing or rewrite your budget. Of course, all of you who have been around for a while, you have to report to ACRES. So the difference is it's a partnership. That cooperative agreement is a partnership rather than just here's some money for your good work. And we call them both grants, but again, really what you're doing is a cooperative agreement. And of course, they call them RFPs, they used to call them, requests for proposals. Really, they're calling them now RFAs, requests for applications. So they're applications for the cooperative agreement for funding, and that's what we're going to be experiencing in the next month and continuing. And, of course, aside from all of that is, of course, contracts, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But today what I really want to talk about is partnership development. And when you look at the RFA from last year and very likely this year, the majority of the points, which is really 28 for community and employer partnerships, is 28 points out of 109, with another 6 points for leveraging. And I really consider, when you're looking at partnerships and leveraging, they're almost the same thing. If you do a good job on developing your partnerships, you'll be able to write your leveraging part of this proposal in a breeze and get all 6 points. So you've got 28 for developing partnerships and another 6 for leveraging and how you're leveraging your proposal. And this whole, and again, those total 34 points out of 109. This will make or break your grant, really. If you do a good job on this, there's a high likelihood you're going to get the grant. If you mess this up, a high likelihood you won't get the grant. You have to remember some of these grants are decided by just a few points. And remember the last two sessions, we did a labor market assessment and we did a community assessment. Those were only 10 points each. So it shows you how important EPA thinks these partnerships are, and for good reason. These grants are just $200,000. So you really need partnerships to move on and ahead and grow your program. And EPA recognized this from the beginning. They actually, when they formed this 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, they looked at this as seed money to get you started to move on to bigger and better things. And many grantees have done exactly that. And some have not been able to do that. So we've got some that have used this as introduction to much more money, bigger grants, state funding, foundation grants. And then we've had some that they needed this money and they weren't able to develop their partnerships, and when the money went, they went, and they just weren't able to continue their program. So let's look at that guidelines, and it's really kind of simple when you look at partnerships. It's subdivided into three sections. There's partnerships that have to do with environmental projects in your community. And then there's partnerships that have to do with the community that we talked about, the community assessment, your community. And then there's partnerships that have to do with employers. Of course, the most important thing, who's going to hire your students. And the way they divided up these monies, they gave 8 points to making sure that you're working with, you've got the pulse of remediation. What's going on in your community regarding environmental projects? They score that about 8 points. And then they score another 8 points for what's going on in your community. Are you working with your churches? And then they assign 12 points to working with employers. And they all follow the same pattern. And I'm going to go through this, because once you do it with one of these, you do it with all of them, and you're going to be where you need to be. So let's start with environmental projects. That's the first one. They want you to be in tune with what's going on. You really need to find out, are there any active brownfields programs in your area? What are they doing? Who's doing it? To the extent you could get them involved. It's not only just brownfields. This is a brownfields program. You certainly want to know that. But what about other programs? You remember many states have state brownfields programs. We've got federal brownfields programs. You've got Superfund programs. So you've got to look at all of these. And you may have some community development programs. So you really have to kind of do a scan of what's going on. You got to get off campus on all of these, find out what's going on, and get a feel for it. One of the things they're going to ask is, what are the quality of these partnerships? And when I say partnerships, you've got to get in touch with a contact person, try to explain to them what you're doing, explain to them what you want to do, and see if you could work with them. Now, I'm going to preface everything I'm saying by what is hard for new grantees. Those of you who are new, if you don't have the grant in your hand, some of these things, you have to approach this a certain way. You have to approach this that you're going to get the grant. You are going to get it. And if you do all of these things, you will get it, because others will not do this. You have to move forward with the assumption you're going to get the grant, and you have to get commitments, and you have to demonstrate to these people that come next spring, that money will be flowing, and you'll be having meetings, and you'll be doing training in the summer or next fall. So with that approach, you move forward, and you want to say, we're applying for the grant this summer. It's going to take a while. It's a federal grant. We probably won't know till the springtime, and we'll really begin operating about a year. It takes about a year to get this thing rolling. But we'd like to touch base with you now so that we could include you in this proposal. And in all of these, as I've said in other discussions, you want to go from the general to the specific. As I said, first you got to get the lay of the land. You want to start picking out people who could be partners. Maybe there's someone that's in charge of a brownfields remediation. It may be someone in government. It may be something in the DENR, the Department of Remediation or Department of Environment, someone who is involved in remediation or the environmental efforts in your area. Now you want to start zeroing in and tightening the screws on these people. You want to say, okay, we're going to be doing this. If we do it, would you support our program? Would you help out? Can you help out? Would you, and you approach it from this angle, would you be interested in perhaps a guest appearance or a lecture? Most of us in the training arena, you'll rarely get a no. Could you speak to our graduates? Can you speak to our graduating class? Could you perhaps, because you're familiar with brownfields, do an introduction to brownfields? Or could you talk about Superfund in our state? So what you want to do is start to get that commitment. Now, all along, you've got to annotate, you've got to take notes, get phone numbers, get names. And again, what we're slowly doing and easing this person to bond with your program. And remember, as I said in the very beginning, you haven't even gotten this yet. But if you don't take this approach, I'll show you how you're going to go nowhere. And the next guy is going to have it in his grant, and he will get the grant. So now we've got him. He's saying, okay, I'm interested. I don't know if I'll be employed in this place in a year from now. It's a long time out, but I'm interested, and I like what you're trying to do. And then now you really go after the juggler. You say, when we submit this grant, which will be in about a month, do you think you could write us a letter of support? Now, these letters of support for EPA are not politicians and important people. They are the people that are your partners. EPA wants to see commitment letters and partner letters. They want to know, oh, yes, this would be a gem. We're doing brownfield remediation and assessment. We like this program. We support it. And we would like to perhaps do some training and maybe even look at the graduates. We'll talk about another component of this in a second. You want to get them to commit. Now they don't have to write the letter that instant. They say, we're going to be writing this grant. It's just coming out now. We're going to have 60 days. In the next month, can we contact you to write a letter of support? And again, you don't want to commit. Commit is a bad word. Because people don't want to commit it to anything these days. You want to ask them if they could support you. Would they look at your candidates? And we'll talk about that in a second. So anyway, this same strategy we're going to use in three different sectors that I had first mentioned. The first sector is going to be in remediation and environmental projects in your community. The second one, we're going to do the exact same thing about your community in your target group. And then we're going to do it to your employers, which is really important. So we're going to use the same strategies in all those groups. You're going to also ask them, would you consider being on our advisory committee? And again, as this grant, and we'll talk about it later, as you submit this grant, you're going to be keeping in touch with these. Perhaps you might even ask, you know, as we write this grant, would you be so kind as reviewing it? Now, these are they're subtle questions, and they're really complimenting the person. If you've got the right person, I'd be happy to help you. I'd be happy to look at your grant proposal. There's an alternative motive to this, because EPA wants to know, are these people engaged in your grant proposal? That is a key. Again, it's a key. Now, what I'm saying, if you're doing this and everyone else who's not listening to this call are not doing this, where do you think the points are going to go? Now, we're talking about just for remediation and projects in your community, we're talking about 8 points. That'll bring you from, if you had perfect score on everything, it'd bring you down 92. just on that one issue, that if they don't address this, if they haven't contacted these people with regarding to the environmental projects in the community, they're not going to get the points, and you are. So again, you hear it, you, when your RFA comes out, you're going to see two here, 2 points there, 3 points for evaluation. These add up, and when they do the final point total, they can make the difference between, again, getting it and not getting it. So I've talked about looking, the first general section is environmental projects that are going on, whether they're brownfield, Superfund, any kind of cleanup that's going on in your community, and you're going to try to identify people, and you're going to kind of slowly tighten the noose on them, get them to commitment letters, get them to look at your program, perhaps be on their advisory committee. Again, if they say, oh, I'll consider being on your advisory, take the names down, because in your grant proposal, you're going to have your advisory committee already listed, and you're going to be putting their names and their positions and what they're doing. And again, you do it. This is why this takes a while to do. So all along, you're taking these notes. Now we're going to switch to the community. So you're working in a general community. You're going to do the exact same thing. You're going to get the feel of the community. What about the religious leaders, the informal influencers in your communities? Not only that, is who is working in that community? Are the WIBs, what WIBs are around? What churches are around? What, is there a goodwill organization? Is there a homeless shelter? Is there a food pantry? Is there a social services? Now, some of you already have social services built in. You're going to identify in your community who those partners are. Now, remember, the purpose of a partner is to give you the things that you lack. And EPA is only supporting $200,000 for some infrastructure and a specific number of environmental remediation courses. That leaves, and that we'll talk about in a future PLC, a whole lot of other things that have to be funded. And those are the things we're going to go after these partners for. So when we talk about the community and the target community, you're going to be identifying exactly, you know, who can help provide these services, whether it's banks, WIBs, churches, social service organizations, local police, drug rehabilitation services, health and human services, all of those things that are going to eventually turn into life skills. That's the target you want to go after. In other words, in this block of people that we're talking about as partners, you want to go after people who are going to provide you life skills and training that EPA will not cover. And that is who you're going to go after. You're going to find out who they are. Then you're going to find out who the person is that is the influencer in that organization or has the power to direct funds, services, in-kind assistance, facilities to you. You want to find who that is. You want to do the same thing as we just discussed. You want to slowly try to get a commitment from them. Would you participate in this program? Trying to explain to them, EPA is only funding these technical courses. We need some life skills. We need some transportation help. We need some drug rehabilitation help. We need testing help, or we need someone to provide fit tests or physicals. Could you help us? And they say, sure, because we're getting grant money to do this. We're funded by the state to do exactly what you want, and we've got to show our worth. Remember, partnerships goes two ways. You're receiving benefits from them, but they're counting you as providing services to the community. So this works two ways, and you'll be surprised at how many organizations want to help you if they know you're out there. And it's a feather in their cap to say, we're providing fit tests or physicals or drug testing to this job training program working in this underserved community. And they're going back to their sponsors with those positives. And they said, good thing. Good. It's good what you're doing. So you need to do the exact same thing. You need to try to get some tacit commitment that they'll help. And then, ideally, you want to go to the next step. You want to go to a letter of support. And in fact, if you possibly can get an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, they might say, well, say they're a drug rehab, or they're a social services, or transportation. We like what you're doing. We have the funds to provide that services to you. And we're not only committed, but we can write an MOU that we're going to support your program. EPA did this. They went to all the other agencies. They got them to write MOUs that said, we will support the Brownfields program. And this is how we're going to do it. And again, here's what you're looking for. You're looking for those letters of commitment and support. And again, doesn't have to be written on that first phone call. You're developing a relationship. We'll get back to you. Can you put someone on our advisory committee? We've got someone coming from the environmental projects. We would like some people who are going to be providing the non-EPA supported training. Can you provide someone for our advisory committee? And we're going to show you the grant, and we'll have meetings, whether it's quarterly or it'll be Zoom meetings. Sure, you know, we could provide you with someone on your advisory committee. This again is where you want to go. Where other people will not, you will, and you'll get the 8 points that others will not, and that's going to go to your total point total. So we've done it. We've done one group, which is the remediation projects. We've done another group, which is all the people that are providing support that EPA is not providing, your life skills, your student services, your WIB, any kind of screening services, all of that, and the second one. Those were 8 points each. And then now we get to the third one, which is the biggie for EPA, is the employers. The employers count for 12. You're going to do the exact same thing as we just did for employers. You're going to want to go out, and we already talked about labor market assessment, so you've probably, ideally, maybe you've already started this, so you've got it in the back of your mind. You're identifying employers that are likely to look at your students, perhaps hire them under your best circumstances. You want them to bond with your program, because the more they get into your program, the more likely it will be that if they have an opening, they're going to hire someone from your program because they've gotten to know them. It's a known entity. They know your program. They know how your program works. Chances of them either referring or hiring your students is much greater. So this kind of melds into that whole thing of labor market assessment. If you do a good labor market assessment, you're going to have some names already. You're going to know, do you have a tank manufacturer in your community? Do you have a demolition company, a construction company that's working with hazardous materials, a recycle company? Do you have a chemical company? Or do you have a manpower firm that does deal with remediation, or a temp firm? Or do you have a EMS or some sort of firm that may require hazardous materials, HAZWOP? You're going to try to identify these employers. And as you do that, again, you want to try to get them involved, kind of suck them into the program. The ones that come out as stars, and they'll show themselves if they're really interested. And on their side, remember I said there are other agencies that get credit for helping you. On the side of employers, you have to remember, some of our grantees are delivering $5,000 and $6,000 worth of certifications. HAZWOP, of course, but a whole lot. OSHA 10, OSHA 30, RRMP, asbestos, a lot of the biggies, state certifications. Students who are pre-screened are drug-free, have gone through the vetting process, have endured the rigors of the program. There is something in it for employers, particularly now. It's hard to find it. Good employees. So they definitely have a motive for getting involved in your program, particularly the ones that are looking for people that may need to be certified. So you want to try to identify them, and you want to do the exact same thing as the other two groups. you want to say, approach them slowly. Are you interested? What do you do? Oh, yeah, okay, you've done some brownfields work, or you've done some labor market, you've done some assessments, or you've done some cleanup, or whatever it is. You've done some recycling. Could you come in and lecture to our class? You would be really good. And these are the ones, these are the people you really want to have them come in and lecture to your class. You want them to bond with your class, because an employer who is in your classroom will be scoping out the students, and he'll see some and they'll say, this guy's a winner. I think we can work with him, even though he hasn't graduated yet. He's participating in a class, or this guy's pretty sharp. He's dedicated to this. They're going to start identifying. You want to get potential employers into the classroom. And how do you do that? You ask them to be guest speakers. You ask them to be teachers. The more you ask of them, the more they're going to bind with your program. So, again, try to get a commitment out of them. Again, I hate that word commitment. Try to get them to agree to help you with your project. And the final and the big step is, could you give us a letter that you would be you like our program, or you're interested in our program, and you would be willing or interested in reviewing our graduates or considering them for employment? You don't have to get a firm commitment, I'm going to hire three people. Or you may get lucky. People have gotten lucky. It was a tank manufacturer. I'll hire everyone you got, tank manufacturer. Well, you probably don't want that. All your eggs are in one basket. You may get that kind of response. I need Hazwoper and OSHA 10, or I need R&P so badly. I'll take everyone you've got, or I'll look at everyone you've got. Well, good enough, but let them, when the time comes, you want to ask them, once this announcement's made, I got 60 days. Those commitment letters are good for 6 months. So when the time comes and we're developing this grant and we've got our curriculum down, and I can show you the curriculum. In fact, I would engage your help in writing this, helping us with our curriculum, which we'll talk about at another time. We would really appreciate that. And again, what we really need here is a letter of support. These letters of support are extremely important, and they look at those. And again, here's 12 points. So we've got 8 points. We've got 8 points. We've got 12 points. Together, they amount for majority of all of the other categories they're going to evaluate on. So whether you're an existing grantee or a new grantee or a hopeful grantee, I would suggest looking at partnerships in this way. And again, when we'll zero in when the exact guidelines come out, but very likely they will be very similar to this. So again, remediation community, which are life skills and all of the non-supported, and then employers. Again, amongst each of those groups, you want to engage them, find out who they are. You want to get to know them, get names, try to get them into your program. And third, you want to try to get them to bond, actually contribute something to the program, and hopefully some support letters. That will get you everywhere you need to go as far as developing partnerships. The next thing, and I've included it with partnership because it's like falling off a log, leveraging is 6 points. It's the next evaluation criteria. This will be so easy to write because they're talking about 2 points for in-kind support, that you demonstrate that you're getting some in-kind support from one of your partners, that how you're going to benefit from these activities, commitments and letters of support that they're going to provide. It's a done deal. So if you do a good job on developing your partnerships, you could write this in 20 minutes, 15 minutes, this part of the grant, and get 6 out of 6 very easily. So this whole area of partnerships, it can be intimidating and probably takes more time than the whole rest of the project, and it does take time. But if you do it, it's the centerpiece of what you're doing. And again, you have to go with the assumption that this is a go, that you're going to do it, and you have to bring these people on board now rather than you can't wait. You can't, people who try to write a proposal in 60 days or in 30 days, you can't include these people in your proposal if you don't have them on board yet. So you really have to get them on board first. Every proposal should have their advisory committee and where they're from and how they're going to help you in that proposal. To do that, you've got to do this hard work that I've just been talking about. Those of you who are existing grantees, when the next time is for a re-up, the competition is going to be steep. This is a good time to bring these people on board. Our experience has been once you get advisors and you get these partners, they're on there for a long, long time. They're in for the long haul because they know you could help them. So even if you're an existing grantee, it's a good time to sharpen your pencil and increase the effectiveness of your grant proposal. So that kind of is what we're talking about in partnerships. And we're going to ask for questions in a second and discuss it. But I just want to quickly, because it always comes up when on this whole deal of partnerships, what is a partner? And I just want to spend a few minutes on that. At our annual all-grantee meeting, we talk about this. Keep in mind, you've got partners where money is exchanged. It's grant money. That is serious stuff. Then you've got partners where no money is exchanged. It's in-kind, gifts, contributions. We're going to help you. We're going to do the drug testing for nothing. We're going to supply these non-supported courses. Those EPA, they care about that you're doing it, and it's leveraging and it's partnering. But from a administrative point of view, you can do nothing wrong there because federal money is not involved. It's from an administrative grants point of view. So all of those partners, we're talking about all kinds of partners, but there's different kinds. The ones, the in-kind, the gifts, the contributions, most of your partners will be not receiving federal grant money. Those who are a different story, and they can be divided into two sections. There's sub-grantees. For example, if you're a city government or a county government and you've got a sub-grantee, a community college who is doing most of the work, you're submitting your fiscal agent and they're doing the work, they would be a sub-grantee. And that's simply just that community college is just like they're submitting their own grant application. They're written into the grant as a sub-grantee. They have to do everything. They have to be a .org. They have to follow all the rules just as if they were submitting their own grant. In fact, those of you who are really small may want to link up with a county or a big organization who has done this before and become a sub-grantee of them. And so you're just subject to all the limitations of the grantee. So they're getting it in name and they're passing it to you to do all the work, and you're a sub-grantee. Federal money is exchanged. You will be responsible for audits, everything that the county or the city or whoever it is who got the grant is responsible for. So you're kind of just a subset of them. That's one type of fiscal grantee. The other type is where you're using consultants, contracts, and you're paying them out of federal money. And there, it's fairly simple. You want to get three bids. You basically, they say if you're using federal money and you're not a sub-grantee, you have to conform to federal contract guidelines. And the contract guidelines are long, but basically they have to conform to all the federal regs regarding contractors. But you have to get three bids for them. Now, you can do this. Before you could bring them on board before you submit your application. And the reason I'm saying that, say you want to use a particular training consultant and you need his help in writing the grant or getting the numbers of what these things are going to cost and everything. You can do that two ways. You could ask for those quotes, or you could even vet him, bring him on board, and then include him as a person that might be doing the training, that he's been vetted. You've done the three contracts. He's already on your organization, and he will be doing the training. Here are his credentials. The advantage to that is you could use his credentials. He is, this particular consultant has trained 500 people in HazWhopper. He's got these certifications. He's got this many years of experience. If you don't have him on board, you can't really say that. So it's something in terms of the grant administration where you need to be concerned. So, and you could get those three bids now. When you go out for those RFQs, requests for quotes, you just want to make sure you've got certain stipulations in that request that, one, this is dependent, everything is dependent on, one, you're getting the money, two, that availability, their availability is subject to your target group and your schedule of training. So you just want to make sure that everyone has an escape route on that, that they would be bid and quoted and vetted and be in your organization. But there is an escape route that if you don't get the money, all bets are off and everyone walks away. Or if your training schedule is such that they're just slammed and they can't do it, there's a way out. So you can, again, you could vet this, your consultants and contractors before you write this grant. So this is what we're talking about today is a way of, I think, supercharging your proposal to make sure that you've got things in there that a lot of people won't have, and will push you way up in the standings. So as usually, we talk a little too long, or I've talked too long. Anyone have any questions on partnerships or any of this? I'm going about, or any questions, or how about comments in terms of what you've done that works? Anything?
Oh, I would just add that those partnerships take, this is Janet in Santa Fe Community College. I would say those partnerships don't start out real strong. Usually you develop them through time. So the sooner you can start, the better.
Good point. And you've got some great partners. And it's not only, I mean, that those three types of partners are true. You do got to develop your employers, but you have to develop at home your service providers, and you certainly have to develop your community. And that might be even the hardest one, isn't it, Jan? I mean, you have to become a trusted member of your community with this, and that's tough for first time.
That the example I would give is, like, for example, the first round grant that we had, 2011 through 2014, 15, Los Alamos National Labs didn't hire any of our graduates, but the contractors did, and the contractors gave feedback that our graduates were very good. Okay. So in the second round, I got about 11 or 12 of my graduates into Los Alamos, and then more with the contractors. And so we'll see how we do in this third round.
I expect it's going to grow. You know, the more you have, it's one of those things. And it does put new grantees at somewhat of a disadvantage. EPA tries to compensate for that. But you haven't established those relationships. You don't have graduates in jobs in those companies. So that's why you have to take a real positive attitude. We're going to get this grant. And that's a little bit of a step. And let's take the worst case. You don't get the grant, or for some reason something happens and the money doesn't come through. You go back and we didn't get the grant, but you've really helped us, and we're going to reapply. And many of our grantees get it sometimes the second time, sometimes the third time in some cases. The other thing that happens is if a group does not get the money, other people step up and they say, I'm impressed with what you're doing. And I think we need this in the community, and we're going to give you some seed money to get you through. We'll support some programs for a year until next year, or we may even support the whole program. We like what you're doing. We like the idea. It's politically positive thing for this city or county, and we want to support you. So I think there's a lot of positives, and again, you have to go in with a positive attitude to do this right. And if you don't think you can do it, then you don't have a chance when you start writing these proposals, because you won't have the commitment letters, you won't have the interaction, you won't be able to name names, you won't be able to demonstrate to EPA that you're involved in the community and you've got employers lined up or willing to look at your people. So, and this applies for... Yes.
EPA Region 6 just asked permission to release my grant proposal out to other people who want to apply for the grant in EPA Region 6 to use it as an example of a successful grant. So I don't know if any of the EPA people are doing that in other regions, but I gave permission for them to use my grant to people who are interested in applying.
Well, that is very generous of you. Our stance over the last 20 years is we don't do a couple of things. One is we can't evaluate people's grants because we think it would be a conflict of interest on our part. The other thing is everything is very local, and we would hate to have cookie-cutter grants. In other words, yeah. I think the beauty of this program is everyone is different.
Caveat. Online, too.
Good. Community, Jana, in fact, your community is like no other, really.
Totally. Well, I warned them.
Yeah. If you're in Philadelphia and you're in Santa Fe, I mean, your curriculum, your target groups, I mean, they are going to be like night and day. And that's the beauty of this program. You may be going after one group or another group, or the target group you're using just couldn't take those courses and survive. They couldn't get through the program, you know, or if they got RRMP and there's no lead because you're a new community, no one's going to get hired, you know, that kind of thing. But that's very generous of you. We've never asked people to do that. And we've never, for that reason. And in fact, people want to know when we get to curriculum, we'll be listing probably 40 courses. We're, you know, aside from HAZWOPER and maybe OSHA 10 and 30, at that point, you branch off really dependent on your labor market assessment, you know, and it's, and many may be similar, but that's not for us to decide. But that's very generous of you, Janet.
No, I took the reason I hesitated, don't get me wrong, I hesitated for about an hour before I gave permission. Mm-hmm. Because don't forget, this is a very competitive grant pool, okay?
Right.
But I also had to step back and go, I am in a community college. I am a public institution. And part of my responsibilities are to teach people. So when I looked at it from that perspective, that's why I went, well, no, you know, as long as you give people the caveat and they understand the limitations of what my grant could be as an example, then I don't have any problem with it. But they owe me a tip.
Yeah, they do. They owe you. This goes back about three decades. We were doing environmental technician curriculum. We were actually developing at HM2I. And we uncovered situations where these were actual consultants who were taking our text and just putting their name on it. And that kind of bent us the wrong way, although we didn't go any further with that.
I just changed the tenses of how you write it and that way.
Mm-hmm.
just kidding.
But that's, you know, that's the education. I mean, we build on each other's shoulders, and we do, in this program, we share information, and that's what we're doing here. We're saying this is what works and this doesn't work, and stay away from this. And, you know, so you're exactly, that's a gray area of how do you mentor and at the same time make sure people are thinking independently about their program. But that's good. That's good. Any other comments? Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. The comments are good. And next PLC will be on the 11th of August. And I wouldn't be surprised if between now and then the RFA doesn't come out. And we may be talking about that. But go out there and try to drum up some friends, some new friends. And I think you'll be happy you do. So. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you.